Thank you. I'd like to call this August 2nd, 2024 meeting of the Arizona State Board of Optometry to order at 8:01. Roll call. Ms. Becker, would you please call roll?
Yes. Yes, thank you. Dr. Moffitt?
Present.
Dr. Mastores?
Present.
Dr. Cohen?
Present.
Dr. Carpenter? Noted absent. Dr. Brown? Noted absent. Public member Diva Galan? Noted absent. Public member Sammy Hamed?
Present.
Board staff, Director Margaret Whelan?
Present.
Vaughn Becker, licensing admin? Present. Legal counsel, Mona Baskin.
Good morning, present.
Thank you. And Madam Chair, or Madam President, we have quorum.
Thank you. Agenda item C, board purpose statement. The board meeting statement of purpose, a license to practice optometry in the state is a privilege granted by the Arizona legislature through the Optometric Practice Act. In 1907, on behalf of the people of the state, the legislature created the Arizona State Board of Optometry to regulate the practice of the profession of optometry, issue licensure where appropriate, and in general, assure the public that the practice of optometry will be conducted with reasonable skill and safety by persons who meet the curriculum requirements to hold a Doctor of Optometry degree from an accredited optometry school. To enforce the Optometric Practice Act, the board reviews applications for licensure and complaints relative to the conduct of its licensed optometrists and is charged with determining if the provisions of the Optometric Practice Act are met. In addition, the board may promulgate rules and policies in conformity with the stated purpose of the board and the mission as mandated by law. As of January 1, 2019, all board meetings are digitally recorded with the recordings of the audio available to the public on the board's website under the consumer information link. Agenda item D, declaration of conflicts of interest, if any, for this meeting. Are there any conflicts of interest to declare amongst the board members today? Okay, I hear none. We're going to start with agenda item H, review, discussion, and possible action regarding compliance, revision, or termination of consent agreement and probationary order. Number one, Dr. Michael Flores, related to order number 2024-00254. We have received acknowledgement of receipt of the consent agreement now from Dr. Juarez. Any questions from the board members or further comments?
This is Dr. Mastores. I think maybe there was a timing issue, but this is the first, you know, time he's had submitted it. So I think we got what we needed, and I think it's good. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. I understand counsel is here for Dr. Flores. Any comments from counsel or Dr. Flores?
Dr. Flores, no questions here. We just wanted to be here to answer any of your questions.
Okay. So I'm under the impression the board received what it was looking for, and there are no further issues. Okay. So we'll move on then to agenda item F, review, discussion, and possible action. Oh, excuse me, agenda item E, president's report. I have no report today. Agenda item F, review, discussion, and possible action on investigative reviews complaints. We'll start with Dr. Lewis's case as he is present. So IR number 202428 and patient TN, I see that you are present. Dr. Lewis, I see that you are present. Any counsel for Dr. Lewis? Okay,
counsel.
All right. And can we open this up for a board summary? Would someone on the board like to summarize this complaint, please?
This is Dr. Mastores. I can take over. So IR number 202428, Dr. Vance Lewis, patient is TN. Her complaint states that she had an exam on February 14th, 2024, although she says she was not... She didn't have an exam. She was offered cataract surgery without actually having an examination. She stated that the doctor was just in the doorway and never really looked at her eyes. Subsequently, the patient had another exam a couple weeks later with a different doctor and a follow-up contact lens exam, which we've received the records for all of those. I think that's it. Thank you.
Thank you. I also meant to lead with when we're discussing these complaints, as this is telephonic and virtual, all comments should be prefaced first by stating your name so that everyone on the record knows who's speaking. And then also, when referring to a patient, please only use their initials. Let me just start with patient TN. If you would like to address the board and explain or have any further comments for the board, we've reviewed your entire submittal, but if you have anything else you'd like to say to the board or any explanation to offer, this is your time to do so.
No.
You have no further comments?
I only that I sent you everything and you should have all the information.
Okay, and we do. So then I'll give Dr. Lewis an opportunity to speak if he'd like to make any comments regarding this complaint.
Sure. Yeah, this is Dr. Lewis. I've practiced in Arizona for 10 years, and I've never not examined a patient that has come to see me unless the patient refuses service. And as you all know, as fellow doctors, working as an employee in a company, I never work directly with the insurance company or bill claims myself, as I'm not a solo practitioner with limited staff. I'm just employed by a company that does their own billing using staff. So under no circumstances would I have had any contact with the insurance company myself, to have any personal direct contact with them to dispute any claims or make any written conversation or phone conversation of any kind. That was all done on my behalf with staff with Swagel Wooten. So when I saw this patient, she wanted to do a contact lens fitting and a vision exam, but when my technician was trying to do her refraction, she was having difficulty. So when I came in and quote unquote stood in the doorway, that was me just kind of letting her know that the technician was having some issues and that given her history, I was wanting to discuss with her that cataract surgery might be necessary, and that contact lens fitting may not be a good idea at this time. Not that I had refused the service in any way. So after she was dilated, I did do a full exam, and I did recommend cataract surgery.
Eyes were never dilated.
And so
you cannot speak at this time. This is just Dr. Lewis's opportunity to speak.
So as you'll see, I have exam notes of the thorough exam that I was able to do. And I did give her a contact, or I did not do a contact lens fitting per our discussion. And I did do a glasses prescription. And after recommending cataract surgery, she did refuse. So anything that in...
Please mute your microphone. Patient TN, will you please mute your microphone? Thank you. Go ahead, Dr. Lewis.
So I wasn't involved in anything that has to do with her paying a copay or what the amount was or anything involved with insurance claims. So I don't know how I could have committed fraud if I wasn't involved in any of the discussion involving insurance. So yeah, that's all I have to say. I did do an exam. I've never not done an exam on a patient that willingly desires to be there for an exam. That's all.
Okay, thank you, Dr. Lewis. Does this conclude your comments?
Yes.
Thank you. So I'm going to open this up now for board discussion. While the board is discussing, we may ask questions directly of either the patient or Dr. Lewis. That's an invitation to talk with us. Otherwise, please mute your microphones and hold your comments. Board discussion, any comments from the board members?
Yes, hi, this is Dr. Cohen. The issue of, as I see it, the issue of the billing, I agree, doesn't fall in the hands in this case of the provider. However, the provider puts down the codes based upon what services were provided. And the dispute here seems to be a patient who says the doctor stood in the doorway and never did any testing, and a doctor saying, I did a complete exam. So I don't know if we can get any comments to get clarification either on what was a complete exam and or the disparity of someone saying they never set foot in the room versus I completed a full exam as I typically do.
Thank you, Dr. Cohen. I'll also offer from my perspective that what I perceive to have occurred is that Dr. Lewis stood in the doorway before he had examined the patient and offered that the patient had cataracts and likely needed them removed. Dr. Lewis, it sounded like from your description that you did do that because the technician was having trouble refracting the patient. So that seems a little early to draw a conclusion such as that. And so my question to you, Dr. Lewis, is that what happened?
Sure. So when a patient comes in to do, desiring a contact lens fitting, it kind of is broken up into two sections for the exam. One would be before they get dilated, we want to do their refraction and then do a contact lens fitting so that their dilation does not interfere with their refractive results. So when the technician was doing the initial refraction, which I always double check, they were not seeing any improvement based on their visual changes and their entering acuities. And then, so when I came in after the technician came to get me saying, okay, the patient is here to do this, this is their complaint. When I went in, I initially stepped foot in the doorway and the patient started discussing with me before I even fully stepped foot in the room and sat down, having complaints of, my contacts don't seem to be, making my vision any better. And so I did not diagnose cataracts at that time. I said, there's a possibility that, given your age, if you haven't had cataract surgery already, that could be why. So we may not want to do a contact lens fitting until I can fully assess the health of your eye because you are not an established patient at this time. So we agreed at that time, me and the patient, to not proceed with the contact lens fitting and to proceed with double checking to see if there is a cataract that would be worth doing surgery for. As I do work in a practice that does surgery internally. So I would never diagnose. I always can say there's the potential given your age. The patient may have been offended by that. There was no offense intended. And I always, want to make sure that we're not wasting the patient's time and money paying for vision services such as a contact lens fitting or a refraction if really in the end what they need to make a difference is to do cataract surgery. So whereas we don't take vision insurance, the patient would have had to pay out of pocket for those services. So I try to streamline things. I try to, make an educated guess, but I don't fully diagnose and make full recommendations until the patient has been thoroughly examined with a dilated exam, which I did do on part two. And then she desired to still have a glasses prescription, which I released to her. And then we did not do a contact lens fitting. She, according to her documents, did proceed to do that elsewhere. But at the time, I felt her best course of action was cataract surgery. So that's all.
Okay, thank you. I'll just say my perception just based on the submittal from the patient and then also Dr. Lewis's submittal was that it did sound like, and maybe you want to rethink how you present this information in the future, Dr. Lewis, but it did sound, and I'm sorry, I'm not inviting a conversation back and forth. I'm just stating my opinion for the board. It did look to me like you sort of diagnosed cataract early before an exam had taken place, just after refraction. And of course, patient at 84 can have concurrent ophthalmic issues. and maybe not a visually significant cataract. There could be other limiting factors to the vision, a whole host of them. And so I would be careful about how that's stated and why. I understand the contact lens charges and the contact lens fit and being concerned that the patient's going to pay for that out of pocket. It does look like from subsequent exam, the patient best corrected to 20/30 with another provider and was given the contact lens prescription. And it's certainly satisfactory in functional vision. So those are my comments for the board. Other comments from board members? Dr. Mestores, would you like to offer any thoughts here?
May I make a comment?
You can if one of us invite you to speak, but for right now, this is only board discussion. Please move.
This is Dr. Cohen, if I can, because then I could allow the patient to speak, because I want to at least clarify, because I'm still a little confused. Patient says the doctor never entered the room, the whole counter occurred at the doorway, and doctor stating that a full exam ultimately was done. So to the patient, I just ask if the initial conversation sounds like occurred in the doorway, did the doctor subsequent to that, before you left the office, come in the room and do any testing on your eyes at all, or was the entire counter from the doorway?
No. The,
I'm sorry, I don't know what no means. The, no what?
No. My eyes were never dilated. No one did anything.
So specifically, I'm asking, ma'am, if did the doctor at any point before you left the office sit down in a chair, talk to you, use any equipment, any testing? Was your only encounter with the doctor himself from the doorway?
No. No.
Can you please clarify what you mean by no? No what?
There was a technician who asked if I could see the lines on the chart, which I did. And that is the only contact anyone had with me or my eyes concerning my vision, or any costs I could incur. The only thing that happened was the technician asked if I could see the lines on the chart. She was still there. He came to the doorway and said I needed to have cataract surgery. He never saw my eyes. I asked him how he knew I needed cataract surgery, and he just kept trying to get me to approve of it. So finally I said, no, I don't want it. I'm not going to do it. And he left. He was in the hallway when I left, and I said, you can't even write a prescription for glasses because you didn't see my eyes. And he said, just a moment. And he came back with a prescription for glasses, which I have, having never, ever examined my eyes. No one refracted my eyes. No one examined my eyes, including him. He is not being truthful, which I can understand because of the complaint. But I would have never filed that if it had not happened. It has nothing to do with price because no one even discussed price with me.
Thank you very much, Dr. Cohen. And then, Doctor, if you could tell, you said, after the patient was dilated, I did a complete exam. Since the patient is saying that you never did any testing whatsoever, do you recall what testing you specifically did constitute the full exam?
Yes. So I have a full record here. I don't know if you have, if any of the board members have document of my exam notes, but there's record of dilation drops being placed in. Medriacil and neomycin. We have a timestamp And we have Goldman pressures done. We have pupil measurements. I have lens notes about nuclear sclerosis and cortical cataracts. I have what lenses I used. I did an optic nerve CD ratio grading. I have record of what her current contact lens prescription or what she is currently wearing. I have a manifest prescription. So, I mean, I don't have anything to gain by fabricating a chart. That would be against my personal ethics to fabricate an exam with a patient who is desiring to be examined. So, you know, there are two parts to an exam when someone wants to do contacts. So the technician did do pressures and dilate, and then I saw the patient and double checked the prescription. And yes, it was printed out and I gave it to her.
Thank you. I appreciate that. This is Dr. Cohn again. I don't want to belabor the point, but clarify, you gave the list of the testing was done, but I'd asked specifically what tests you as the doctor did. So apparently it was the evaluation of cataracts, retinal evaluation. You said you rechecked the manifest prescription because yes. The other issue, the pupils and whatnot and installation drops, tech is doing that. So I'm interested specifically in services you provided since
sure.
The stating that your entire encounter was from the doorway.
Sure. I mean, I did a slit lamp exam and a fundus exam with a 90 diopter lens and then BIO 20 diopter exam. And then using the Ferropter, I double checked the prescription that the technician had done an initial on before I finalized the prescription. And then of course there was discussion about my findings, about her having combined forms cataract and some floaters and then having presbyopia.
May I comment?
Dr. Cohn, are you done with your questioning?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yes, I am. Thank you very much.
Okay. Not at this time, patient TN. I'm going to ask Dr. Mastoris for your thoughts.
Dr. Mastoris here. This is a really difficult situation because there's, you know, two different stories. The record indicates that the exam was completed and the doctor examined the patient and actually checked the refraction. In the second records we received, you know, it was consistent that the patient has had cataracts. The chief complaint at the second exam was even a cataract follow-up. So I don't know if that was just triggering for the patient to be told that or something. It's difficult to, I don't know really how to proceed because there's just two different stories, but we do have records, complete records to prove that there was an exam given with detail. So I'm not really sure what to do. Thank you.
Okay. I'm going to offer some more thoughts here. So it's difficult in a situation like this because we do have, and patient Tian, I'm just hoping that you're listening to me at this point, but we do have complete records from Dr. Lewis's office that show an exam, so and a detailed exam. For instance, if this was just generated from EMR auto-loaded or preloaded exam findings, then some of them have been altered. Right. And so it's hard to say that there is any suggestion, I guess, of inauthenticity as far as the record goes. The prescription, looking at those numbers and comparing to your other exam, they are different, but they also are suggestive that it was done. So I don't see anything along those lines. I will say for Dr. Lewis's benefit, at least, that the chief complaint on TN's exam says cataract check, as opposed to, it's not even the chief complaint, the encounter visit says cataract check, as opposed to comprehensive exam. And so I don't know if that's something that your staff is sort of trained to open the encounter that way or why it's written that way. A cataract evaluation is sort of different than a comprehensive exam. I don't know if it was scheduled that way. I don't know why there's the presumption of that, I guess is what I'm getting at. So to me, that looks presumptuous, unless the cataract or unless the patient in this instance said, I'm coming in for a cataract evaluation. By all accounts, she does not appear to have wanted a cataract evaluation. And so, like I said, to me, that almost reflects on the practice in some ways, that maybe that's a presumption. Having said that, patient DN, for your benefit, there's just no evidence that what you've said is true. It doesn't mean that what you've said isn't true. We hear you, but there's no evidence of that. And so in this case, I would have to say that that we should dismiss, that there's no violation of the statutes. That would be my impression. I'd like to get everyone on the record, please. Dr. Cohen, what are your thoughts?
I'm always, Dr. Cohen, I always have a concern when there's such diverse descriptions of the same event. But in light of the documentation that's been offered, I come to the same conclusion that you do, that we can demonstrate that a violation of any of the statutes has occurred in spite of this really questionable description on both parties' part. So I agree with you.
Thank you, Dr. Cohen. I'll also say for TN's benefit that, you know, the board, if the board sees something along these lines again, of course, you've brought this to our attention. So it's on our radar now. So this isn't all for naught, just in my opinion, just so you're aware. Dr. Mestoris, do you have any thoughts to offer?
Don't I agree? Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Hamed, any comments for the board?
I have no comments.
Thank you. Would someone like to offer a motion?
This is Dr. Mestoris. I motion to dismiss the complaint based on no violation of the Optometric Practice Act.
Thank you. Is there a second? I'll second.
It's Dr. Further Cohen. I'll second.
Thank you, Dr. Cohen. Any further discussion? Okay, so we've had a motion to dismiss and a second. Let's vote. Mr. Hamed, how do you vote?
Oh, that's ridiculous.
I vote aye.
Thank you.
He made that whole thing up, and you're taking that as true.
Your microphone. Please
mute I have.
Margaret, can you mute her microphone? Thank you. Dr. Cohen, how do you vote?
I vote aye, and based on the issue of the documentation, not questioning the veracity of either person.
Yes, thank you. Dr. Mestoris?
Aye.
I also vote aye. Motion passes 4-0. We'll move forward to complaint number IR20247, Dr. Jason Pick. I'll offer a board summary in this case. So patient RS saw Dr. Pick and desired a refractive eye exam. Patient has a history of a retinal detachment in the left eye with pseudophakia in both eyes and history of pseudoexfoliative glaucoma and or pseudoexfoliation syndrome with ocular hypertension. Patient sees a retinologist, Dr. Dinesh, we assume annually, and then Dr. David K for his glaucoma care. At intake, patient's IOPs were 25 in both eyes by Tonopen, and this was a new patient to the practice. Patient was charged for a new patient comprehensive eye exam, refraction, and optomap. I'll say for the record, I know this was at our last meeting. I have reviewed not only the complaint, but the discussion that took place after that. I understand there were additional records requested. Is patient RS present?
Yes, I'm here.
Thank you. And Dr. Pick, are you present? Okay, no. I'd like to give patient RS, I understand you gave comments at the last exam or at the last meeting, but if you would like to offer comments today, this is your opportunity.
Yes, I appreciate that. So what I'd like to summarize is the complaint dealt with Dr. Pick billing me for services not rendered, for my visit during the visit on December 8th. And specifically, he did not conduct a comprehensive exam, which typically includes dilating the eyes, pupil dilation, a slit lamp exam, and possibly a visual field test. He also did not perform a fundus photography, which I was billed for. So I was billed for comprehensive exam and fundus photography, which I'm stating was not performed. Yet during the June 7th board meeting, Dr. Pick had said he had stated that he had checked my eyes and found them to be 25 millimeters in both eyes. And he also said that because of that high reading, he did not dilate my eyes. The fact is my pressures have been under control for several years with the aid of two ophthalmic solutions, which I instill in my eyes daily. And this fact is substantiated in my medical records, which I assume you have. So also to exemplify this fact, on August 29th and December 6th of last year, I visited the glaucoma specialist, and the readings which he found was on the 29th of August, my pressures were 21 OD and 17 OS. And on December 6th, which is just 2 days prior to my visit to Dr. Pick, my pressures were 20 OD and 18 OS. In addition, this year I visited my retinal specialist and on March 6th and the glaucoma specialist on July 24th, and they both found the same IOP of 21 OD and 16 OS. In addition to this, there is one more disturbing fact about my visit to Dr. Pick. Besides being charged for services not rendered, the billing showed an insurance adjustment, and the statement even had an invoice number to make me believe the veracity of the statement. The fact is, this is not true, and charges were never submitted to my insurance. I conclude my comment.
Thank you, patient RS. I'll ask one last time, Dr. Pick, are you available? Okay.
Hi. I do want to introduce myself. My name's Brandy Haig, and I am actually just listening on behalf of Dr. Jason Pick. I am a representative from West Point Optical.
Okay. Thank you for introducing yourself. I'm going to open this up now for board discussion. Any comments from the board? I'll state a few things that I think maybe just are helpful, my impressions from what I've heard from the previous discussion and then also today. And this might help at least for patient RS to understand. So one thing, a comprehensive eye exam does not have to have a dilation. So that's not a required component of a comprehensive exam. It's a certain number of points that have to be done. So that doesn't disqualify what you had as being comprehensive. A visual field is billed separately. It is not part of a comprehensive exam. A threshold field is actually a separate billing procedure, and so that's different. From the review of records, I don't really have any question that there was a comprehensive eye exam done. The OptoMap images were the fundus photography, so it's the same thing. You can have different forms of fundus photography, but the OptoMap was billed under fundus photography. The OptoMap images were provided to the board, so you did have that done, and we did look at that. My impression is this, and we have this conversation quite frequently with patients, the difference between vision insurance and medical insurance. I had a patient just yesterday, and I was actually thinking of this case coming up. The patient presented and had two other providers and wanted glasses, but of course he's a new patient to myself. I don't know his history. All I know from his history is what he presents himself. Patients don't always give you a great history, and sometimes they do give you a great history, but that doesn't even mean that you are aware of everything that's going on inside of the eye. When you have a new patient present to you and you're being asked to do sort of a limited exam, only what they want, you're essentially asking the doctor to sort of just trust you and compromise on what their professional standards require of them. So if he knows you have a history of retinal detachment and you have a history of glaucoma, and you ask him, hey, you know, I don't really want to be dilated. I'm dilated with my other doctors, but you don't present with records that show him that you are receiving care from other doctors. It's really kind of a trust situation. You're asking him just to take you at your word. In this situation, I would have insisted on dilation. I would have had a conversation to that effect. And I think that if anything, that's where it looks like things went wrong to me. In your interaction with Dr. Pick is that there wasn't a thorough conversation, or at least it wasn't documented, that you require a dilated eye exam at presentation. You're a new patient. He wants to see what's going on in your eye. He's responsible for your care regardless of what you say to him. You're asking him to take responsibility, but without him doing a thorough exam, that's a professional standard that he's compromising. So that's, for me, what's important to understand here. I would have also billed your medical. I would have insisted on dilation, or I would have said, you know, at least let me get to know you. Let me look in your eyes. Let me understand what's going on here. If your care seems to be under good control, then in the future, maybe I can do less and just assist where you need me to. That's how I would have handled it. That's my perception of this. And it doesn't look to me like Dr. Pick did anything incorrect. I mean that to be reassuring to you. I appreciate patients want to use their vision plan. Vision plans really are for sort of straightforward, simple, non-complicated, non-medical patients. And when you have medical diagnoses, you don't fall under that category. It is supposed to go to your medical provider. And so those are my thoughts. I'm gonna open this up to other board members, please, for comments.
This is Dr. Mesoris. I have had similar experiences even just this week where a patient really just wanted a refraction. And, you know, she also had a complicated medical history, and it's just a difficult situation. But, you know, we are supposed to follow the chief complaint. So the patient's chief complaint was, you know, blurry vision. I need new glasses. But I agree, I would also want to do it all so without having records. So a lot of times in my office, when things like that happen, we request the records prior from the other doctors. I don't know if that may not have been able to be done in Dr. Pick's practice situation, but that is how we handle it in my practice, is we'd request these retina and glaucoma records prior to just doing a refraction or only doing part of the exam. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Mesoris. Dr. Cohen, any comments?
No comments, thank you.
Mr. Hamed, any comments? Mr. Hamed?
No comments.
Thank you. Would someone like to offer a motion? So I will. I would move that we dismiss the case against Dr. Pick as there is no violation of the Optometric Practice Act. Is there a second?
This is Dr. Mester. I saw a second.
Any further discussion?
I would like to respond.
I think that's okay. Right now during discussion, or no, I see Mona getting ready to unmute. Go ahead, Mona.
Yes. Hi, this is Mona Bathkin. I'm the attorney representing the board. And sir, at this time, they're in the middle of a motion, so it would be inappropriate for you to be speaking at this time. Dr. Moffitt, if you want to withdraw the motion and withdraw the second and allow him to speak, that is certainly your decision, but not in the middle of a motion. Thank you.
I mean, I'll withdraw for the moment. Dr. Mesoris, are you okay withdrawing for the moment? Patient RS, if you want to make a brief comment, that's fine. And I'll say that we appreciate your feeling about this. It's just that there's also a professional conflict here for what you want, and then also what the doctor is responsible for. But you would like to, if you would like to make a comment, that's completely okay.
Okay, sure. Thank you. Appreciate it. What you your conclusion stated about the medical and vision test and insurance. I understand that. I know if he had done a comprehensive exam, which included the fundus photography, if I knew he did that, I would have no problem with that and building it to the insurance. I did call both my vision and medical insurance, which are both at there, and they both said there's no record of them ever submitting any exam to them. So as I said, the statement is showing, indicating that it was a comprehensive exam, which, okay, there may be some discretion as far as what is included. But as I said, he did not dilate my eyes for one thing. He didn't do a slit lamp exam that for those issues. And as I said, he didn't do a fundus photography. The thing is, as far as, again, he had said I had 25 millimeters in both eyes when he examined me, and that has to be erroneous because, as I said, you have my records, and if you look at them, they're basically 21 and thereabouts OD and 17, 18 maybe OS for my pressures. So being 25 in both eyes, when I had gone to the glaucoma specialist just 2 days prior, when, as I said, it was 20 OD and 18 OS, I see no way that it could have jumped from 20 OD to 18 OS to 25 when he checked me 2 days later. So those are the things. I also would like to know, presumably my medical records for the retinal specialist and the glaucoma specialist were asked for and provided. Fundus photography that was presumably submitted by Dr. Pick, does that compare to my exams by my doctors? So I would like to know that answer as far as if it seems to be congruent as far as both of them.
Yes, I would say that it is. Yes, so we did receive images and we did review your records from your retina and also your glaucoma specialist. The other issue, because I meant to address this after I heard you say it the first time, with regard to your intraocular pressures being 25.
Yes.
And again, I'll say that most of these things come down to communication between the patient and the doctor. But intraocular pressures can vary throughout the day. So throughout the day and night, they can vary. Pressures that seem fairly stable at a 20 and 18 aren't far off from 25, believe it or not. And this could just be that his tonneau pen needs a little bit of adjustment. It could be simply the way that it was taken, that that measurement was a little higher than what you typically see. But that doesn't change the mindset of the doctor who's evaluating you at presentation if your pressures look high. And so that's the premise under which we're reviewing this, right? In addition, with pseudoexfoliation, you can have quite erratic pressures. That's the whole beast that is pseudoexfoliative syndrome, is that your pressures can be so, so difficult to control and they can be so variable. So none of that is out of the realm of possibility, is how I would present that to you. So we do look at that and consider all of that. We are looking for consistency and does this make sense? What was done based on what was seen and that kind of thing. And I just have to say there's no violation of statute. So that's the conclusion that we draw from that. Okay, so I'm going to reintroduce my motion that I would move to dismiss the case against Dr. Pick, IR number 202427, as there's no violation of the Optometric Practice Act. Is there a second?
Ms. Soros, I'll second.
Thank you. Further discussion? Okay, I hear none, and so we'll vote. Mr. Hamed, how do you vote?
Aye.
Dr. Cohen?
Aye.
Dr. Mestores?
Aye.
I also vote aye. Motion passes 4-0. We'll move on to our last complaint. Also, Dr. Pick, IR number 202501. Is patient PM present? Okay. And Dr. Pick, not present. Dr. Mestores, would you like to offer a summary, please?
Okay, let's see. We have IR number. I'm so sorry. Just trying to pull it up.
I can help if you'd like.
Okay, so sorry. Lost my page.
Okay, I'll do this one.
I'm so sorry.
That's okay. So patient PM saw Dr. Pick for a routine eye exam. Patient was charged for an OptiMap and a copay. She ordered glasses from iBuyDirect.com and had headaches and nausea with the new glasses. Patient PM followed up with the Lens Crafters and had glasses remade and was happy with the glasses. Patient would like to be reimbursed from Dr. Pick for the ProVision exam, the copay, and the cost of glasses from iBuyDirect. That's my summary. I'll open this up for comments from the board. Excuse me. Yes, comments from the board. Dr. Cohen, I think you might be first.
Yeah, I don't have the information from me from our recollection, though the I don't recall that the patient went back to Dr. Pick, is that correct?
You are correct.
Discuss
yeah.
it? Yeah. Correct. So we don't know anything about how it was made from the online, any of the types of materials they use, measurements, PDs, base curves, accuracy of the prescription. We don't have any of that. Information. So my view of it is that while it's unfortunate the patient had to seek some other care, the doctor can't be responsible for something that's made elsewhere. And there's so many other factors that could explain the symptoms the patient experienced. So I don't see any violation here.
Okay. This is Dr. Mastoris. Found it. So it can be difficult when we write a prescription and then it's made elsewhere, especially online. A lot of things can occur. A lot of things can go wrong. Online glasses are not as accurate as in-office measurements and fit of frames. With that being said, I was very interested in how they coded this. It looks like they were billed for a fundus screening and medical fundus photos. So that didn't make sense to me. And then the primary diagnosis was this thyroid toxicosis, which I just really wasn't sure that was the initial chief complaint coming in. So it almost looks like trying to switch it from vision to medical. So that's what I observed. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. One other comment, I just want to say that when I was reviewing the records with Dr. Pick's manifest refraction, of course, because that's what creates the glasses prescription, he did have some changes in there on axis there, 20-30 degrees change in both eyes. I thought, well, potentially that's an issue. We requested the records from the follow-up exam with Lens Crafters, and I looked at the prescription that they provided, and it pretty much matched Dr. Pick's. So this looks to me pretty straightforwardly, like it was probably the iBuyDirect, and we all know how many problems you can see from these types of eyeglass purchases. And if you don't follow up with the doctor who wrote the prescription, they don't have an opportunity to help you. And so I don't really see that Dr. Pick has any responsibility here. So I also see no violation. Mr. Hamed, any comments?
No comments.
Okay. Would someone like to offer a motion?
This is Dr. Cohen. I move that we dismiss this on the basis of no violation of the Optometric Practice Act.
I'll second. This is Dr. Moffitt. I'll second. Any further discussion? Okay. So we've had a motion and a second to dismiss the complaint against Dr. Pick. Mr. Hamed, how do you vote?
Aye.
Thank you. Dr. Cohen?
Aye.
Dr. Mastoris?
Aye.
I also vote aye. Motion passes 4-0. We'll move forward now to agenda item G, review, discussion, and possible action regarding compliance, revision, or termination of a non-disciplinary order. Number one, Matthew Lopez, Dr. Lopez, related to IR number 202426. Dr. Lopez submitted 5 continuing education credits in coding and billing. Any discussion regarding the submission and any concern about terminating Dr. Lopez's non-disciplinary CE order?
Dr. Mestores, I have no. It looks good. Thank you.
Thank you. Dr. Cohen, comments?
I have no concerns. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Hamed, any concerns?
None whatsoever.
Okay, so I also don't have any concerns about dismissing the non-disciplinary order. Would someone like to make a motion?
This is Dr. Mestores. I motion that we dismiss or we accept Dr. Lopez's submission and release him from his order. Sorry.
It's Sammy, and I'll second it.
Thank you. Any further discussion? All right, so we've had a motion to accept Dr. Lopez's submission and terminate his non-disciplinary CE order and a second. Mr. Hamed, how do you vote?
Aye.
Dr. Cohen?
Aye.
Dr. Mestores?
Aye.
I also vote aye. Motion passes 4-0. Agenda item I, review, discussion, and possible action on pending license by examination applications. Number one, Blake Henson. So there was an undisclosed criminal record on the licensee's application that was discovered on a DPS report. Any discussion from the board regarding granting of this license?
Madam President, Dr. Henson is here if you would like to hear from him first.
Yeah. Dr. Henson, would you like to address the board?
Hello, good morning. The only comments that I have to make were that I was not trying to be deceitful or try to hide anything. I was under the impression that dismissing a case meant that it was expunged from my record. I didn't understand the difference between the two, and so I knew that the case had been dismissed. My understanding of the law was that that meant it was expunged from my record. And so that's why I put no on question 19 on the application. I now know that there's a difference between dismissing a case and expunging a case. And I will not answer no on that question on any further applications.
Thank you. I would say full disclosure is always best, Dr. Henson. The only thing that I'll bring up is that for consistency reasons, oftentimes the board in the past has issued a letter of concern along with the license if everyone still feels that that's appropriate. Just reiterating that this was concealed at the first view. So I just would toss that out there for discussion. How does the board feel about that? Dr. Mestores, I'll start with you.
Thank you, Dr. Mestores. I know we have done that in the past, but I think prior, maybe people we've talked to weren't as forthcoming, whereas Dr. Henson seems to be very forthcoming and understanding the situation. So I do feel a little different about this case that he's here, he's presented, he gets it. He was not trying to be deceiving. Thank you.
Okay. I'll say for the record, he was quite young too. Dr. Cohen, what do you think?
Yes, I would agree. I think that he's being forthright, having a better understanding. I think we all need to be sensitive. Because we don't understand the law, a lot of our patients don't understand what we do. So we need a little higher level of sensitivity. The only question I have, Dr. Moffat, either for you or for Margaret, is on that line item where they disclose that, I don't have it in front of me, but I believe there was something that explained what you're supposed to write. Was it more than just whether yes or no, saying this could include even something that was dismissed, if my recollection is correct?
It does say that. Margaret, do you want to address that?
Sure. So Dr. Cohen, members of the board, this is Margaret Whalen, executive director. There is a little blurb on that question that says, if just because something has been expunged, removed, rescinded from the record, does not mean you can answer no to that question. So it is very self-explanatory. How people interpret it, I guess, is the question here. Dr. Henson has already said his piece on that. So I don't know how that's going to help you one way or the other, but it definitely is, there is an explanation from the board there as to how to answer that question.
This is Dr. Cohn. Thank you, Margaret. And based upon that, I would agree, although I don't think Dr. Henson was in any way trying to be deceptive. I think this was a truly an honest mistake. I think in light of the fact that the questions does specify things that a letter of concern for that with the granting would be appropriate.
Thank you, Dr. Cohen. Mr. Hamed, do you have an opinion on this letter of concern, no letter of concern? What are your thoughts?
Well, having reviewed the file and heard the comments and stuff, I don't think there was any malicious intent there whatsoever when he responded, actually, the respondent, when he did that. And I don't know if a letter of concern is appropriate in this case, or I think just a verbal warning is more than enough and we should move on as a result.
Okay. Would someone like to make a motion? We need to vote on whether we accept this license application and also if we want it to be accompanied by a letter of concern or not. Would someone like to make a motion? And then we'll vote.
This is Dr. Messeris. I'd like to move that we accept Dr. Henson's license and issue no letter of concern.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, further discussion?
I'm sorry, who seconded that?
Mr. Hamed.
Thank you.
Okay, so we've had a motion and a second to accept Dr. Henson's license for application. Let's vote. Mr. Hamed, how do you vote?
Aye.
Dr. Cohen?
Aye.
Dr. Mestores?
Aye.
I also vote aye. Got a little lucky with that one, Dr. Henson. Okay.
Thank you guys so much.
Yes. Moving on to agenda item J, review, discussion, and possible action on pending license renewal applications. Dr. Marshall Palmer. I see Dr. Palmer's here. So I would just say first to the board, any concerns regarding re-licensure for Dr. Palmer based on his submission? And one other thing that I think we should pay attention to is just that we could direct Dr. Palmer's attorney to update the board with any resolution going forward. Dr. Palmer, if you would like to take a moment to discuss the board, you're welcome to do so.
Sure. I don't know if there's any questions for me, but there's a lawsuit against me and a couple of other surgeons, the practice I was working for. And so they're just trying to figure it out. So far, they have not been able to find a witness. The plaintiff has not been able to find an expert witness to testify against me. So they're trying to drop me from the case. I've reviewed the records recently. I feel like I did good care. And so anyway, we're just kind of waiting to see what happens. But if there's any questions, I'm happy to ask or answer them.
Thank you, Dr. Palmer. I think that's good news. And just because there's a claim against you, it doesn't mean anything to us. We just need to know if there's actually resolution in the case. So we appreciate understanding about this. But I have no concerns about license renewal. Other comments from the board? Dr. Cohen, any concerns about license renewal?
No, I echo exactly what you just said. I think that's very accurate about it. And I wish him good luck with that. It's always very frustrating in the midst of that, but I have no concerns about renewal.
Thank you. Dr. Mestores, any concerns?
Dr. Mestores here, I agree.
Thank you. Mr. Hamed, any concerns regarding renewal of Dr. Palmer's license?
No concern.
Okay. I'll make a motion in this case to renew Dr. Palmer's license, just with the caveat that Dr. Palmer's attorney or Dr. Palmer keeps us updated on resolution in this case or in this claim. Let me state it that way. Is there a second?
Dr. Mestores, I'll second.
Thank you. Any further discussion?
Madam Chair, what do you mean by an update, if you will? Are you just curious to find out the outcome of that or
no,
what? Because that's a little concerning.
Any malpractice claim, if there was a settlement or resolution, the board needs to be notified of the result of the claim. So if he's dropped from the case, that would be one resolution. If he has to see it through to the end, whatever that looks like, his attorney or Dr. Palmer needs to notify the board of how this lands. So that's what I mean by it. Does that answer your question, Mr. Hamed?
It does.
Thank you. So now we'll vote. We've had a motion and a second to approve relicensure for Dr. Palmer. Mr. Hamed, how do you vote?
Yes.
Dr. Cohen?
Aye.
Dr. Mestores?
Aye.
I also vote aye. Motion passes 4-0. Good luck, Dr. Palmer.
Thank you.
Agenda item K, review, discussion, and possible action on pending license by telehealth application. So we have an application, Dr. Severa Patoli, who is applying for telehealth. She appears to meet the requirements. I was concerned there was no stated purpose. I would really like to know that, but apparently we don't have to know that. Any comments from the board regarding licensure for Dr. Patoli?
Dr. Muffet, I had the same thing, like, wait, what, why? But yeah. You know, yeah, if it works, it works.
The purpose.
Madam President, members of the board, just for clarification, since you brought it up, the volunteer application is the only application that requires explanation or intent to practice for those few days in Arizona, but the telehealth law does not require that. Thank you.
Unfortunately. Okay. Any comments from board members regarding Dr. Patoli's application? Dr. Mestores, no other comments?
No comments, yeah.
Comments. Dr. Cohen, comments?
No comments, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hamed. Any comments?
No comments.
Okay, so would someone like to make a motion to approve Dr. Patoli's application?
This is Dr. Mestores. I move that we accept Dr. Patoli's, telehealth application.
Thank you.
Dr. Cohen, I'll second that.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Okay, so we've had a motion and a second to accept Dr. Patoli's application for telehealth. Mr. Hamed, how do you vote?
Aye.
Dr. Cohen?
Aye.
Dr. Mestores?
Aye.
I also vote aye. Motion passes 4-0. Agenda item L, review, discussion, and possible action on pending license applications awaiting fingerprint reports. Request for board approval pursuant to ARS 32-1730. So license applications number 1-4. Any concern about granting these licenses prior to their DPS results?
Madam President, members of the board, if I may, again, these are submitted. The application is administratively complete except for the receipt of the report. And all of these doctors answered no to all the questions. So we do not expect there to be any report. Thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate that, Margaret. Any comments from board members?
Yeah, this is Dr. Cohen. Margaret, I have one quick question. Is the lag in getting these back been improving at all, or is it the same as it's been for the last few years?
Thank you, Dr. Cohen. This is Margaret Whalen. It has improved. It still takes a long time if people don't use the electronic fingerprint system through Fieldprint. These are actually cards that were submitted, so those are taking 6 to 8 weeks still, but they are not taking the 2 to 3 months that they were taking just a little bit ago.
Ms. Dr. Cohen, thank you very much.
Margaret, maybe you would want to explain the electronic fingerprint option that licensees have to the board. Thank you, Mona. So the Department of Public Safety, DPS, contracts with a company called Fieldprint, and that's an option for applicants to get their fingerprints electronically sent over to DPS. There's several hundred locations throughout the state in the U.S., and they go get their fingerprints electronically, digital. Printed, and that turnaround time is 3 to 4 days. It's very fast.
So we always encourage that, but there are some people for whatever reason that either don't trust the process or we are having a little bit of trouble with out-of-state applicants, which is 90% of the people. Sometimes it goes through, sometimes it doesn't. So they end up sending cards if that's the case.
Thank you, Margaret. Any discussion from the board members regarding approving these licensees? Okay, so I would move that we accept L1 through L4 for licensure in anticipation of their fingerprint reports for license. Is there a second?
Yes, this is Dr. Cohn. I'll second that.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Mr. Hamed, how do you vote?
Aye.
Dr. Cohen?
Aye.
Dr. Mestores? Oh, she's frozen on there. Oh, I think we just lost Dr. Mestores.
Yes, if we could just wait a moment. Now we don't have a quorum, so please hold.
Yeah.
I'm looking for her in the waiting room.
There we go. Dr. Mestores, how do you vote?
Aye. I don't know what just happened.
Yeah. I also vote aye. Motion passes 4-0. Agenda item M, Executive Director approval of new license applications pursuant to ARS 32-3123. So in the period of June 6th, 2024 through July 31st, 2024, we have A through double F. A lot of applications.
Yes, I'd like to commend Ms. Becker for her hard work.
Oh.
Thank you.
Thank you. agenda item N, review, discussion, and possible action on approval of continuing education as provided by ARS 32-1704D. And AAC R4-21-210. There are two different classes listed here. A, glaucoma paranoia, Arizona eye consultants. I think that was Dr. Kilgore for 1 hour on the 21st of August. And then bad corneas, I don't remember the doctor's name, from Arizona eye consultants. Again, August 21st, 2024 for one continuing education credit. Comments regarding this CE submission?
This is Dr. Mestores. I would like to take both of these courses. They looked excellent. So I think we should approve them.
Dr. Cohen?
I concur with Dr. Mestores.
Thank you. Yeah, I'll also say for the record, I thought the glaucoma paranoia, I would love to listen to that. Mr. Hamed, comments regarding the CE?
No comment.
Okay, so would anyone like to offer a motion approving these two classes for continuing education credit?
This is Dr. Mestores. I move that we accept the continuing education courses A and B listed on our agenda. Thank you.
I'll second. Further discussion? We've had a motion and a second to accept both glaucoma paranoia from Arizona Eye Consultants and bad corneas from Arizona Eye Consultants, each for one continuing education credit on August 21st, 2024. Mr. Hamed, how do you vote?
Aye.
Dr. Cohen?
Aye.
Dr. Mestores?
Aye.
I also vote aye. Motion passes 4-0. Agenda item O, review, discussion, and possible vote on request from the Council on Optometric Practitioner Education for approval of course reviewers. Number one, COPE reviewer request letter for Dr. Caitlin Voss. Any discussion or concerns about approving Dr. Voss as a COPE reviewer? I'll say for the record, I have no concerns. Dr. Mestores?
Dr. Mistouris, I have no concerns, and I'm excited that somebody in our state is stepping up to that. That's very cool.
Great. Dr. Cohen, concerns?
No concerns.
Thank you. Mr. Hamed, any concerns?
No opinion either way.
Okay. Can I get a motion to approve Dr. Caitlin Boss as a co-reviewer? I will move to approve Dr. Caitlin Boss as a co-reviewer. Is there a second?
It's Dr. Cohen, I'll second.
Thank you. Any further discussion? All right, so we've had a motion and a second to approve Dr. Caitlin Boss as a co-reviewer. Mr. Hamed, how do you vote?
Aye.
Dr. Cohen?
Aye.
Dr. Mestores? Oh no, she's frozen again.
She sounds like she doesn't want to get on the record to vote for anything.
Very suspicious. Two votes in a row, right?
She's back on, Stephanie, here. She was. Oh, that was quick.
Dr. Marvin, this is Dr. Cohen. I, while we're waiting for that, I'm on podcast.
Oh, no. Dr. Cohen, we can't hear you. You're breaking up for just a moment.
All right. And we do not have a quorum, Madam President, so if we could just wait until Dr. Mestores joins us. Thank you. Madam President, members of the board, Dr. Mestores just texted that she's having internet problems, so it'll be just a moment.
Okay.
Thank you. She's going to call in on the cell phone. There she is.
I'm back. Phew. That was scary.
Thank you, Dr. Mestores. We appreciate that. And so sorry that you're having internet issues.
I know you need me for quorum.
Yes.
Thank you, Dr. Mestores. So we've had a motion and a second to approve Dr. Voss's position as a co-reviewer, and it's your turn to vote. How do you vote?
I vote aye.
Thank you. I also vote aye. Motion passes 4-0. Agenda item P, review, discussion, and possible action on Accreditation Council on Optometric Education Report of Actions, July 19, 2024. Call for comments. So number one, topic one, notification related to adopted changes to the 2025 Professional Optometric Degree Program Standards. Any comments from board members about topic one? I'll just put that my comments on this, at least, were just that. Instead of published, they were saying to document it and make it accessible to students and staff. I thought this looked okay. Other comments? Dr. Mestaros, you're muted still, if you have comments.
Okay, Dr. Mestaros here. I have no comments.
Okay. Dr. Cohen, any comments? I don't know if he's hearing me right now. Mr. Hamed, any comments?
No comment.
Margaret, was this the one Dr. Brown had a few comments about the published?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So just so the board knows, Dr. Brown submitted some comments on this. And I think he was concerned that he liked the publishing process and he didn't want to see that go away. He felt like that was beneficial to the student. So those are his comments toward the board.
Yes, yeah, Madam President, if I may add also, his comments did say, what about prospective students? The change seems to limit transparency and he opposes to limiting transparency.
Yes. Okay, topic two. Call for comments on proposed changes to 2025 Professional Optometric Degree Program Standard 110. And this to me, it looked like, you know, when five or more, I kind of wrote some of this down, when five or more of a program students and or graduate participate in any or all parts of a licensing examination series, the result was to be published. If it's less than five, they don't require it to be published. I thought the concern for that was just that the otherwise, the results could be inferred. So there was a privacy concern about those results being published if there were so few examinees. So I didn't have any concern about that. Any comments from board members?
This is Dr. Mestaros. I agree.
Okay.
With you.
Dr. Cohen? Thank you. Mr. Hamed?
No comment.
Okay. Topic number three, the definition of the ultimate pass rate. Looks like it had been adjusted a little bit. I didn't really have any concerns about that, the 80%. I know Dr. Brown did have a few comments about that. Is that correct, Margaret?
Yes.
You know, the 80%, the discussion between the two of you, why don't you just present that. I think it was about part three of MBO. Not everyone has to.
Those were, excuse me, Madam President, members of the board, those were my comments.
Okay.
My observations, I am not an optometrist, I'm not a board member, but I do participate and, you know, I'm interested in the success of the optometry programs. So I had some concern, and these all, I will throw them out to the board. You can accept them and submit them if you want. If not, they're just my thoughts. I kind of had two things on the ultimate pass rate. Not all students take part three for some reason, and also some states don't require it to be licensed. So Arizona is one that requires it, but since all states don't require it, you know, not all students take part three if they don't feel like they're ever going to practice in a state that requires it. And as indicated, not all students share their scores. So again, they have a limited number of states that they share their scores with. We all have access to it. So I'm kind of confused a little bit by changing the requirement. And I also had thought, how can a program's accreditation requirement of 80% graduate and pass all three initial parts on the NBEO within 6 years of matriculation be accurately calculated? It's usually about the data. We have to see, is something successful, is it not successful? And I was kind of confused by that process, but perhaps you can offer some different insight.
No, I took part three. I don't understand anyone who doesn't have to take part three.
Yeah,
that's part three to me.
It's rare. I think the number of states that don't require it is just a handful, but they are still out there. And there's lots of states, I shouldn't say lots, excuse me. There are also just a few states that do not accept the NBEO and they have their own state practical and that's it.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Well, I think your comments are appropriate. You can submit, you know, concerns about that or just commentary, see how they address it. I don't have any other comments to offer. Anybody else? Board members?
This is Dr. Mastores. I always will go with what Margaret thinks. She's so knowledgeable.
I praise. Thank
you. Vote of confidence for you, Margaret. Dr. Cohen, any thoughts? Oh, I think we just, I might have just lost him. Mr. Hamed, any comments?
No comments.
Okay. And then topic number four, call for comments on proposal for the ACOA specified format associated with the 2025 Professional Optometric Degree Program Standard 110. I thought the
Madam President, have we lost our quorum? This is Mona Baskin. I think we have.
I think we may have, but we're not voting on anything right now.
All right. Well, we can't, we cannot conduct business if we, okay. Yes, ma'am. We can't conduct business.
Okay.
Oh, the interwebs.
Okay, I think we have everyone now.
I'm back. I'm sorry. I'm west. This is Dr. Cohen. I'm west of Gila Bend, east of Yuma. So I apologize if I drop out. I'll do my best to stand as long as I can.
Thank you, Dr. Cohen. We appreciate that. We just brought up topic four, call for comments on proposal for the ACOA specified format associated with the 2025 Professional Optometric Degree Program. I thought the specified format for publishing looked good. I think that's nice. Everyone would have the same format. To me, I thought that was appropriate. Any other comments from board members here? Dr. Mastores, comments?
Nope, no comments.
Dr. Cohen, comments?
No comment.
Okay, Mr. Hamed, any comments?
Nope.
All right. Agenda item Q, election of officers pursuant to the provisions of ARS 32-1703A. Number one, position of president. Anyone looking to throw their hat in the ring? This is the time.
This is Dr. Cohen. I'd like to throw Dr. Moffitt's hat in the ring.
Dr. Mastores, I said.
Thank you. I think my hat's in the ring. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you both. So should we vote then? Is that what we need to do?
Madam President, do you accept the nomination for president?
Certainly. I'll accept the nomination for position of president.
Okay. Then yes, please. We have a motion and a second. So a vote would be lovely.
Okay.
Should I lead it?
Whoever.
Yes, please, Dr. Mastores, go ahead.
Okay. Mr. Hamed, how do you vote?
Oh, you have to state them.
Aye.
Rewind. We have a motion to accept Dr. Moffitt as president of the board, Arizona State Board of Optometry. Mr. Hamed, how do you vote?
No. Dr. Mastores, we need a motion.
Then I'll lead the vote.
You don't have to do that.
Okay. We have a motion and a second.
Oh, we don't have a motion.
Oh, we don't? Okay.
No.
Okay. I would like to motion that we vote for the office of president for the Arizona State Board of Optometry. Dr. Armona, am I messing up again?
Yes. I believe that the motion would be, should the board choose this, is to elect Dr. Moffitt as president of the Arizona State Board of Optometry. And then we would need a second.
Okay. I see. We didn't actually say it. So we were just putting our...
Dr. Cohen's was like a half motion, so it was a little bit confusing. And she's frozen again.
Goes up too.
This is Dr. Cohen. Are we waiting for a motion?
We are, but Dr. Mestores just froze again, so we're waiting for her to get back.
Okay, thank you.
Guys, can I suggest something? Or maybe on something like this, we just wait. Do we have to do it today, or can we do it the next board meeting? We have a full complement of the board available.
Madam President, members of the board, Mr. Hamed, you are absolutely right. It could be postponed if the members feel like they want the full board. Madam,
if you wouldn't mind, could we just table that to the next meeting? If you, with all due respect, if you wouldn't mind.
Sure, but it doesn't, it's not only up to me, and then also we still have the rest of the meeting to get through, so.
No, I was talking about that specific item, not the rest of the meeting.
Dr. Moffitt, Mr. Hamed's asking if we can postpone this agenda item to the next board meeting so that Drs. Brown and Carpenter.
Wait for Dr. Mestores, and then we just all decide. I think that would be most appropriate.
Correct.
And it gives this Dr. Cohen gives Dr. Moffitt more time to campaign.
Yes.
Ms. Whalen, could you please draw the board's attention to our statute regarding the election of officers?
Yes.
So that we can make sure
we're in compliance. I'm so sorry. I'm back.
Dr. Mestores.
Okay.
Yeah. Margaret's going to read us the statute here for election of officers.
Okay. ARS 3217.03, organization of the board, compensation immunity. The board shall annually elect from its members a president who shall be chief presiding officer of the board and such other officers as it deems appropriate and necessary to conduct its business. The board shall assign such duties as it deems appropriate to such officers as it elects.
Okay. So thank you, Ms. Whalen. With that statutory language, the board would be able to go ahead and table this and consider it at the next meeting. I just wanted to verify that the statutory language does not specify a month where it has to be, where the vote has to be. And I was having problems accessing the board statutes because my computer is also freezing up as far as the internet. And so thank you, Ms. Whalen. So that would be a legal option, Mr. Hamed.
Dr. Mestores, Mr. Hamed suggested that we wait on voting for our officers and table it to the next meeting, just so you're aware of that. So I thought we would just decide real quickly. Dr. Cohen, do you want to vote now or table it? What are your thoughts? We'll just get everybody's opinion, not vote, but.
This is Dr. Mestores. I'm okay with tabling it.
Okay. Dr. Cohen?
Can you hear me?
Just a little.
I have no problem tabling it.
Okay. So then we'll table the election then of position of president and vice president to our next meeting. Agenda item R, executive director's report. Margaret, budget and finances.
Thank you. Pull up my report here. Okay, our fiscal year 25 appropriation is $289,200, which is actually the same appropriation as it was last year in fiscal year 2024. As a reminder, our fiscal year is July 1st to June 30th. For the close of fiscal year 24, as of June 30th, the beginning cash balance was $607,500, with an ending cash balance of $228,667, which I'll explain in just a moment. 100% of the fiscal year has elapsed with the board spending at 91.34% for fiscal year 24. So our fund was swept a total of $387,100 pursuant to House Bill 2897. Currently, it's a one-time sweep, so hopefully it will not happen again in the near future. However, there was also another measure by the state to further get monies from the agencies. So at the very end of legislative session, I mean the end, I don't even know how the bill got through. House Bill 2910 was passed, changing all regulatory boards from the current 90-10 ratio, which means we keep 90% of our revenue and we give 10% of our revenue to the general fund, to an 85-15 split. This was not a popular bill, as you can imagine, with the small regulatory boards. The legislation was not an appropriations bill and did not include an emergency clause. So despite the language of the bill stating it goes into effect July 1st, it actually does not go into effect until 90 days sine die, which I believe is September 14th of this year, 2024. The bill as chaptered states the new split is a 4-year time frame. So if there's any silver lining, it doesn't appear to be a permanent change at this time. So beginning July 1st, 2028, this is language that's in the bill. You can look it up and read it. Unless a new bill is passed, the fund will revert back to 90-10 split from the 85-15. The bill also prohibits raising fees to offset the sweep unless the agency would become insolvent during that period. Hopefully we will not experience that. As you can see, our fund balance after the fund sweep was $228,000. I think that's a decent amount. And we have pretty prudent spending, I feel, so hopefully we won't experience any of those problems. I just wanted to point out that at least 12 other trade associations collectively wrote in opposition of these bills. The AZOA was notably missing from that collaborative. When that happened, I was a little disappointed because, you know, optometry is very important, and I don't know why the profession wasn't included in this collaboration. So I reached out to Drs. Amber Dunn, who's the current executive director for the AZOA, and Dr. Logan Reagan, who's, he might be the immediate past president at this point, but he was the president back in June, to inform them of the situation, ask for support. As you know, the AZOA has no direct role in our business. It's the money, but it's the money of the licensees and applicants that fund the board. So I'm unsure why the AZOA wasn't involved or included in the collaboration, but I thought they might be interested in coordinating with these associations in the future to help the State Board of Optometry address the issue, which they were completely unaware of. So again, that's not anything that the board is specifically, you know, we just have a good relationship with the AZOA. We need their support. And I think, you know, it helps to have that relationship when they're doing their business. So just as a point of interest, some of the associations were the Arizona Dental Hygienists, the Academy of Family Physicians, the Arizona Medical Association, the Psychological Association, the Arizona Dental Association, Arizona Occupational Therapy Association, the Arizona Athletic Trainers Association, Arizona Association for Behavioral Analysts, and the chapter for the American Physical Therapy Association, also osteopathic, and the Arizona Society of Oral and Maxillofacial Surgeons. So I was a little annoyed because some of these are sort of more obscure, no disrespect professions than optometry, so I just wanted to be included, but that is my professional opinion on that. Additionally, to further exacerbate the financial crisis, Central Services Bureau, we call them CSB, with whom we contract, has informed us that beginning in fiscal year 25, which is the current fiscal year, they will be requiring all monies upfront for the accounting ISA, which is the Interagency Service Agreement, which for us is $23,000. As you recall, it is up from $18,000 just 1 year ago, so our fees had already increased. This is another issue in a long line of price gouging efforts and exploitation of state agencies, not just our board. For the past 20 years that I've been with the board, it has been collected on a quarterly basis, and that is with purpose so that agencies don't find themselves kind of top heavy, you know, with their spending and then, you know, rely on the fees and revenue to come in as the year progresses. So collecting it upfront now hinders the true agency spending numbers. And it means should problems arise when monies are needed for critical function, there's no way to put off or temporarily withhold payment of these funds to assist the agency at that moment. So because CSB is an internal agency, they're part of the General Accounting Office. They're not their own agency. You know, if we needed to kind of shift monies around, and this is not just for our board, but again, for most of the boards, at least we had a little bit of wiggle room, if you will. And now that is kind of been taken away from us. I did manage to negotiate the option to still pay quarterly for this fiscal year because we didn't get any notice and they sent the email around and I was absolutely not okay with that. So at least that gives us a year to plan if we need to do anything. Although with the Department of Administration, we don't usually have any options. So I expect that in fiscal year 2026, we will be paying that up front. On that note, I have been trying to review our situation with CSV because I don't agree with their processes and their new price structure because I felt like the jump from 18,000 to 23,000 was very high when they came out with their new procedures. And so they separated out the shared services, which is a little bit different. So the ISA, the agreement is for accounting services and the shared services, which is like the security people downstairs, the mail opening and the building maintenance and things like that used to be included in the ISA. So now they separated it out. We had an additional charge of $5,200 just for that. So really we're paying the $23,000 and the $5,200, which we never paid before. But I did find out that $2,000 was being charged to open our mail. I didn't think that was okay, only because one of the good things that came out of COVID, if you will, is that the board has gone mostly electronic. That includes the transcripts and everything else that used to be voluminous in mail, in U.S. mail. We rarely get any mail. And I think the total count of pieces was like 52 pieces of mail for the entire year. And I just did not think that warranted $2,000 in charges. So I immediately discontinued that, which hopefully they have removed from the services. I haven't gotten the updated invoice yet. It's August, so that should show you, because that would have started July 1st. And I'm hoping to find another accounting service. Not that we need an outside service per se, but some of the other state agencies who are bigger, like medical board and dental board, they have their own accounting people. And so I'd like to see if the board could get in with their accounting people and do an interagency service agreement with those agencies as opposed to Department of Administration. It would be a huge cost savings. And because our accounting needs are very minimal from the standpoint of, you know, the types of bills we pay and how we access our monies. So the state has very specific processes for accounting, which is why I could do a portion of it, but I would still need a second person. We also can't do payroll because that's my payroll and it's Fawn's. I could do hers, but I couldn't do mine. So it wouldn't make any sense to just, you know, have me do hers. And I still have to find someone to do mine. So one of the issues that we do run into is that the Department of Administration is not very accommodating, and they do not, they sort of make it hard for people to leave CSB and to get their own accounts for the AZ360 and the HRIS and the all the systems that are required. So I'm still working on it because I feel like the $23,000 plus the shared services is really, really way too high for our agency. Sorry, I know that was a lot of money stuff, but I think it was important just so the board is aware of some of the struggles that we're all having. And it's not just our board. I just want to reiterate, it is optometry, but it's not just optometry. So I think back to the fund sweeps, we got lucky. Those of you who have been licensed a long time may remember back in 2008 when it was swept, we were left with like $9,000. So at least this time they left us a bit more money. But that's when it gets very stressful, because then when the costs go up for the regular accounting services and things like that, it just kind of all, you know, snowballs a little bit, because that's not where our money should be spent. Because it also, the last thing I'll say about it is it did, you know, put some of the projects on hold, or it makes them suffer a little bit. So, you know, we are having some issues with our Authentia e-licensing platform system still. I do want to look at a different platform. But of course, now that our monies have been swept and our appropriation has changed to 85-15 from 90-10, you know, we will be losing a few thousand dollars due to that. So it just makes it challenging for us to, you know, continue the daily business of the agency in a good way. So I will keep you posted on that. Again, we're not in any kind of like peril or trouble, thankfully. We survived the fund sweeps and the CSB changes, but it's definitely something I'm working on. staff activities from June 7th of this year to July 31st. We had 112 renewal applications processed, 20 new applications have been received, 16 new licenses were issued. The board did just issue the other four under 1730. 208 phone calls were answered, and 2,625 emails were received and answered. That's between Fawn and I, but as you can see, it's pretty busy. It's steady, it's not overly busy, but these are mostly just applicants. You know, 90% of what we do is applications and licensing. So I think that's a healthy receipt of applications for the last month and a half. Agenda item R3, I just wanted to inform the board that I intend to open a rules docket. There's some rules, our five-year rules review will be coming up in the next 2 years, so we might as well get a head start on it. But also there are some rules that are just outdated that need to be probably amended or clarified. So I will be opening the docket, and then of course I will bring before the board any changes that I'm looking at. But if you want to take a look at the rules in your spare time, if you see any changes that you want, those can be discussed as well, and we'll go through the rulemaking process. I do still have to get approval from the governor's office for the exception that's in law now, but we do have contacts at the governor's office, and we have reinstated our monthly 90-10 meetings with the governor's office, so that's been very helpful. So they're working with the agencies, they're aware of all the board appointment problems, all the rulemaking problems and things like that. So that is being addressed. Are there any future agenda? Oh, I'm sorry, I skipped ahead. I also need to report that we have had four board meetings so far this calendar year, including this year. As a reminder, our board is mandated to meet at least 6 times per year. So I'm expecting the future board meetings for the remainder of the year to be October and December, but we can discuss that in just a moment. Before I get to that, are there any future agenda items of request?
The only thing I would bring up under this topic is just our training. How do you think we're doing on our training requirements for the board members?
Thank you, Madam President. I meant to look at that because it was on my brain, because I feel like it's been a year already since you all took the CLEAR training, but I will look into that and get back to you. Because I would sign up for the CLEAR training again. I think we can do that.
I thought that was great. I think that's nice and convenient for the board members to do their training that way, so.
Thank you. Any other future agenda items at the moment? Okay, so future board meeting dates, I tentatively, to meet the 6 meeting requirements at a minimum, if the board wants to do that, would be possibly October 4th and December 6th. Certainly the board can meet whenever it feels appropriate. If you want to meet in September and October and November, I mean, we could do it however the board wants to do it, as long as we at least have 2 more meetings.
Yeah, I thought October 4th was fine. And another idea, and just toss it out there, I'm not really married to it or anything, but we could have a November meeting, and that way not schedule a December meeting and just see if we needed it or not, just because everyone's so busy around in the month of December. So I just toss that out there as option for everybody.
Okay, so November, excuse me, but November would be November 1st.
And Ms. Whalen, I am available on November 1st, and I have my calendar open, so I can go ahead and include that if that's going to be as a placeholder.
Okay, so both of those dates are good for you, Ms. Baskin?
Yes.
Any thoughts on that, Dr. Mastores, Dr. Cohen, Mr. Hamid?
No, Dr. Mastores. November 1st is tough for me.
Okay.
This is Dr. Cohen. I'm available either of those dates or both.
Okay.
November 1st, I'm not available, but I can do December 6th.
Do we want to schedule both right now, or do we just want to schedule one and then wait till our next meeting and then see?
Yes, Madam President, thank you. I think we can just schedule October 4th. I always just throw the additional or the future dates as tentative. That way people are kind of aware, it's in their brain, they can check their calendar, but October 4th would be excellent for our next meeting date.
Okay, great.
And that concludes my director's report. Thank you so much.
Okay, agenda item S, call to the public. Any members of the public like to address the board? Okay, agenda item T, motion to adjourn. This concludes this August 2nd, 2024 meeting of the Arizona State Board of Optometry at 9:46.
Do we have a motion? I'm sorry, I didn't hear.
Oh, we don't have a motion. Is there a motion?
This is Dr. Cohn. I'll move that we adjourn.
Thank you.
Second.
Thank you. We have a motion and a second to adjourn our meeting. This concludes this August 2nd, 2024 meeting.
We need a vote. We need a vote.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I know it's time.
Don't we all feel the same about this? All right. So, we have a motion and a second to adjourn our meeting. Mr. Hamed, how do you vote?
Aye.
Dr. Cohen?
Aye.
Dr. Mastoris?
Aye.
I also vote aye. Motion passes 4-0.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Sorry for the internet.
Thank you all.
Thank you, everybody.